Hello and welcome to Baseball America's Draft Podcast. I am Carlos Collazo, joined as always by my good pal and friend Peter Flaherty. What's going on, Peter? How are you doing?
Not much. As you said before we hopped on air, I mean, we're kind of in full handbook mode at this stage in the game, writing, you and others editing. So we're go on that front. But
I need to get my writing done so I can jump into editing mode and start to work through some of these chapters. So,
and I got to get my writing done for you to edit. So we're sort of in the same boat, but I'm fired up to talk draft as always.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's December now. It feels crazy. In some ways it feels crazy to be talking draft now because, like you said, we're so focused on the prospect handbook that the draft is like out of sight, out of mind. But at the same time, like the draft lottery is coming up at the winter meetings. Before our next draft podcast, the draft lottery will have happened. We'll know who's picking one, presumably the favorite to take Rock Chalowski, who remains kind of since we've been talking about him, not much has really happened to change or take him out of that number one placement. But today we're going to talk about college pitchers on the draft side. So if you want an elite arm, it is more common to see a player of the college demographic going inside the top 10. If you're a farm system or a fan of a team whose farm system is maybe light on college pitching, or you feel like you could use some pitching reinforcements, I do think this 26th class looks strong on the college pitching side. At this point, I'll kind of throw out what my perception is of the college pitching class, Peter, and you can chime in with yours and either contradict me or agree with me, depending on like how I lay it out and what your thoughts are on it. But it feels like we have a solid core of three pitchers that I think have a reasonable case as the best pitcher in this draft class right now, on the college side specifically. So everything I'm saying is just limited to the college demographic. And it might not seem like that based on where our current rankings have them. There is some separation here between Liam Peterson at Florida, Cameron Flueke at Coastal Carolina, and then Jackson Flora at UC Santa Barbara. We have those players ranked 4, 10, and 17 specifically. But it does seem like since we've started really reporting on this class more heavily this summer and fall, all three of those players have gotten some sort of feedback that makes them a potential SP1 in this pitching class. And then I would say Joey Volchko, former Stanford righty and now Georgia righty, feels like he's this sort of wild card that maybe has better pure stuff than all three of those guys, but also just has a lot more variance to his profile. That means for some people, he's not even a first round talent right now. And for others, they're looking at him like, hey, he's way more talented than 25th overall. And so a lot of that's just going to depend on the season. The same is true for all the players I just mentioned, but I view it as kind of like a top tier that has three pitchers, and then Volchko maybe right outside of that tier, hoping to push himself into it next spring. Where are you at? What are your thoughts on the strength? Who's your favorite? Let's just throw it all open, and then we can go kind of player by player and get into the specifics later in the show.
Yeah, it's funny you let off with that, because when you had proposed the topic of talking about the top college arms yesterday, and I was thinking it through last night as I was falling asleep, and today leading up to the podcast, I was thinking in terms of is there a tier sort of within this tier of pitchers? And for me at least, and this is what I was thinking, and that was going to be the first point I made of the podcast, but for me, even whittling it down further, like tier 1A is Cameron Flueke from Coastal Carolina versus Liam Peterson from Florida. Mm-hmm. That would be my tier 1A. And then Jackson Flora right behind those two in sort of that tier 1B.
Okay.
And then a slight separation leading into Volchko. And then another sort of break leading into other guys like Tommy Lepore, Ryan Lynch, Tegan Coons, Jason DeCaro, etc. Ryan Lynch is actually maybe the most interesting of the bunch, but we'll talk about him on another episode. But for me, like up at the top, it's Flueke versus Peterson. Mm.
Okay. I think that makes a lot of sense. It does feel like there is no pitcher in this class who has this sort of pedigree that, like, if you can remember back to this time in previous draft classes, like where we were viewing college pitchers, one of the more impressive all around profiles prior to the season feels like Chase Dolander. I don't think I had either of Chase Burns or Hagen Smith quite in this tier before their season, although their power stuff maybe makes them an interesting conversation with these names. But do you feel like, for me, none of these pitchers are flawless? Maybe that's the case with most pitchers every year. Like, it's very rare to have a college pitching prospect where you can point to and say, okay, they check every box. Like, even Rhett Lauder, who was a really well-rounded pitcher, I think there are some things he could do going into his draft year to answer some questions. But like Liam Peterson, I guess we can just maybe start off with Liam Peterson since he's the guy who we have at the top of the board. He's in your top tier. We have him ranked number 4. I mean, the reason he is where he is because I think most of the scouting industry seems to feel most confident in having him as a top college pitcher on the board. I wonder how much of that is just because he's pitched for 2 years in the SEC. Because when you drill down into his performance, the stuff in the upside as a pro pitcher, I think, is better than the performance he's shown so far. You're kind of banking on a lot of improvement that he's going to make moving forward, maybe specifically with the control and the command department. But in his first year at Florida, he jumped into a full-time starting role, made 15 starts. The ERA was a 6.18 ERA over 62 innings. He struck out 25.7%, walked 13.5%. He improved pretty much across the board as a sophomore in 2025. Again, made 15 starts. The ERA lowered to 4.28 in 69.1 innings. The strikeout rate jumped to 31.5%. The walk rate lowered to 10.5%. I think for me, with Liam Peterson, he does feel like more of a power stuff over pitchability type arm at the moment. And I'm hopeful that he can change that reputation for me and just for himself and for everyone next year. Just continue making the sort of control strides that we saw flashes of as a sophomore. What are your thoughts on where he's at now and how you kind of stack him up to recent top end college arms?
Yeah, I mean, I think for starters, when you talk about the control and command with Peterson, it's trended in the right direction between his freshman and sophomore year. So, I mean, you're kind of hoping to see another leap from, you know, his sophomore year in 25 into what he does this year in 26. And I mean, the arsenal with him is this like power stuff, screw you type of arsenal, for lack of better phrasing. But I mean, his fastball has been up into the mid to upper 90s, averaged almost 21 inches rather, of ride through the zone last year. And what I thought was interesting, though, is it got hit around a little bit. I think hitters last year hit a shade under 290. And this is a point you brought up in your article that really dove into Liam Peterson. Like, the fastball control is there. He's consistently in and around the strike zone with the pitch. But, you know, the refining of the command and sort of upping the quality of the strikes is going to be key for Peterson. And then he pairs his fastball with the, you know, really effective slider that, you know, is this two-plane pitch. He's able to manipulate the shape of it. Mm-hmm. And it's a sharp-looking offering. I think last year had a 40% miss rate, and then finishes it off with a changeup that'll flash a lot of fade at times and is a more than viable third pitch. And then it'll also flip in a curveball. But, you know, this fall, you know, he made some adjustments to his arm slot, raised it a little bit. He had another fastball shape with a two-seam fastball, so I think that'll play in his favor. But, you know, we talk about bucketing players all the time. I think he fits into a lot of them. You know, it's stuff. The body is exceptional for a starting pitcher. He's this, you know, strapping 6'5" right-hander who's only gotten more physical, a good physical at that, as time has gone on. So, I mean, if he can kind of make strides in the areas, you know, that we and, you know, other evaluators are looking for, especially if he goes out and performs as a Friday night starter in the SEC, that's going to be a tough profile to let fall very long and a tough profile to not snag in pretty short order.
Right. Yeah, another big change for him this past year that we saw was just using the slider a lot more frequently. The usage rate nearly tripled from his freshman season, 13% to 32%. He added 3 miles per hour in power to that breaking ball. It's a high spin pitch, biting action. I think it's his best secondary right now, but I do wonder like how far off you think his changeup is. The swinging strike rate on his changeup last year was actually the best individual pitch of all four of these top guys, Peterson, Flukie, Flora, and Volchko, of any pitch that was used like to a significant degree, basically more than 50 pitches. It was a really impressive swinging strike rate. And I wonder if you think I'm currently a little light on the changeup. I had it as like an average sort of pitch. I feel like it's got a chance to be a little bit better than that. And I will be curious to see like how much he uses the curveball next spring, how much a factor the two-seam fastball becomes in his arsenal. It is hard to, maybe not with like how steep his approach can be with that higher arm slot, like a two-seam does seem to make sense, but it is interesting to think about him adding a two-seam when his four-seam has such great carry and I think is already such a strong pitch.
Yeah, I think with the changeup, you know, it's an offering that at least when watching him regularly flashes above average in a 55, but sort of what we talked about with the fastball, being able to command it on a consistent basis. Mm-hmm. I think if it takes another step forward with his changeup, that'll also play in his favor and, you know, have it lean and err more on the side of a true 55 than a 50 for a third pitch. Because if he gets it in the bottom half and bottom third of the zone and lower, I mean, it's really, really effective, consistently generates empty swings and rollovers and soft contact. But I mean, if he leaves it up in the zone, you know, it gets crushed and hammered, or even in the you know, top two thirds of the zone, it gets hammered. So, I mean, if he can consistently keep it down and below the barrel of opposing hitters, I think that, you know, that's another thing that'll, you know, bolster his stock and sort of tighten up and close up some of the so-called holes. Like there aren't really any like glaring red flags, but I mean, when you kind of get into the minutia of it a little bit, I think that that's one of them.
Yeah. I think if he can just sharpen up the control really across the board for his pitch mix, it'll be hard to point to a significant issue or flaw that you have with Liam Peterson. And of all the pitchers we're talking about here, I feel like he has the greatest lever to pull with his own draft stock, because he will be facing SEC hitters. And the performance in the SEC just does carry a little bit more weight than, I guess, with Volchko, with him moving to Georgia, he'll have the same lever to pull, but at least compared to Flukie and Flora. And let's get into Flukie, because I think they are just very different pitchers in some ways. I think one of the biggest strengths with Flukie is the command that he showed this past year, his fastball command in particular. But he is also a very big physical pitcher, 6'6", 200 pounds. In his 2024 season with Coastal, he made 10 starts, 19 total appearances, so some time out of the pen as well. Posted a 5.73 ERA in 55 innings. Then in 2025, he was an absolute workhorse, 17 starts, 101.2 innings, 3.28 ERA. The strikeout rate actually did go down for him from 33.6% in 24 to 28.3%, but he essentially cut his walk rate in half, going from 10.9% there to a 5.8%. walk rate in 2025. Sits 95 with the fastball. It's been up to 98. Curveball, slider, changeup. What are your thoughts on Cameron Flukie, Peter?
I mean, as we talk through these guys, and it'll be an interesting back and forth for the entire spring, but there's a chance that I end up preferring Flukie to the rest of everyone when all is said and done. Like, I mean,
Peter likes the strike throwers.
Yeah. I mean, as we say all the time, and it's something that has stuck with me ever since he went on Hot Sheet, but like, as Quinn Matthews said, and he summed it up so perfectly, like all, you know, like pure stuff and tools, the only thing it buys you is time if you can't perform or get the ball over the plate. So, I mean, with Flukie, like he's a plus strike thrower. The quality of strikes is really good. It's interesting that the fastball velo is there. And it's another really high carry plus carry pitch like Peterson's, but it's not a huge bat misser. The whiff rate last year was just 20% on it, but he's got a trio of really good, and distinct secondary offerings. Like you said, I mean, the heater's the heater. It's been up to 98. But his mid-70s curveball was a revelation in 2025. It, mm-hmm. you know, flashed above average with, you know, bigger shape and some sharp downward teeth to it. And it had a 49% miss rate. The slider is distinct, both in terms of a velocity band and also shape. He throws it in the mid to upper 80s and it'll flash two plane break. And then his mid to high 80s changeup is a really, really intriguing fourth pitch for me. You know, it routinely flashes both tumble and fade, and mm-hmm. is another consistent swing and miss pitch. It's a deep arsenal. It's a really exciting combination of strikes and stuff. And the body's a prototypical pitcher's frame. He's this long, sort of lanky-ish 6'6" kid. You know, there are a lot of really exciting traits here with Cam.
I feel like Flukie has the best chance of these pitchers at this point, or at least I'm most confident in him profiling as a workhorse starter who is able to work deep into games because he has both the command and the arsenal, the depth of arsenal to attack hitters on either side and just change up looks. Like the fastball slider combo is really effective versus righties. And then he dials up the curveball usage against lefties. And I feel like the changeup has missed enough bats for me to feel confident in it being a viable piece against left-handed pitchers or left-handed hitters as well. Excuse me. I just feel like there is a good foundation of command to build on here. I'm not sure that he needs to add a ton more velocity. Maybe like the fact that he can add a little bit more strength to his frame. I feel like there's still a little bit of projection there. He's not like super filled out or anything. When he moves to the pro schedule, maybe he's just able to maintain that sort of mid-90s velocity on average as the schedule becomes a bit more demanding. But I don't really have a glaring checkpoint or issue or question mark with Flukie. Is there like a specific piece of his game that you think is questionable to you, or is it more maybe you just want to see him do it again and do it more frequently? Maybe the strikeout rate, I think you can maybe critique a little. Like some of the elite guys are missing more bats at the very top of the draft, but like that feels pretty nitpicky at this point.
Yeah, I mean, that's why for me, when it's Flukie versus Peterson, at least yeah. I'm giving the slight edge to Flukie. Like right now, he's my personal number one starter, and I think that when you get into the nitty gritty, you have these, you know, seemingly small things that end up being perhaps a separator in the end. Like with Cam, the stuff is already really impressive and the strikes are already impressive, but you hit mm-hmm. on it. Like there's more projection in there mm-hmm. perhaps than someone like a Liam Peterson. Not that that's a huge differentiating factor or a separator in any event, but you know, if he even adds, you know, 5 to 10 or so pounds, gets mm-hmm. a little bit more physical, maybe even adds a tick or two to the fastball and allows him to maintain the premium velo throughout the entirety of his outing. But I mean, he's shown he can get really good hitters out. The best lineup in the country out last year with LSU and in the College World Series final, he allowed one run and struck out 9 in 6 innings. You know, he's a really complete arm. Like, mm-hmm. you know, it's strikes, it's stuff. He can get left-handed hitters out on a consistent basis. They hit just 245 against him last year. He mixes his arsenal really well. It's a deep pitch mix. The you know, he threw over 100 innings last year. I mean, I don't know. For me right now, he's the top arm on my board.
Nice. Yeah, well, I mean, as we talk through him, like you guys could probably hear it as you're listening, it's hard to find a real critique that feels significant with Flukie, which obviously makes him really compelling.
Holiday season is upon us, and if you're still searching for gifts, don't panic. Uncommon Goods makes holiday shopping stress-free and joyful with thousands of one-of-a-kind gifts you can't find anywhere else. You'll discover presents that feel meaningful and personal, never rushed or last minute. Uncommon Goods looks for products that are high quality, unique, and often handmade or made in the U.S. Many are crafted by independent artists and small businesses, so every gift feels special and thoughtfully chosen, like the MLB Perfect Catch coaster set, which can turn any table into a home run display. Uncommon Goods has something for everyone and every occasion. From moms and dads to kids and teens, from birthdays to the holidays to anniversaries, you'll find unforgettable gifts that are anything but ordinary. When you shop at Uncommon Goods, you're supporting artists and small independent businesses. Every purchase is a chance to choose something remarkable and feel good about where your money goes. With every purchase you make at Uncommon Goods, they give back $1 to a nonprofit partner of your choice. They've donated more than $3.1 million to date. So don't wait. Make this holiday the year you give something truly unforgettable. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/BA2022. That's uncommongoods.com/BA2022 for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods. We're all out of the ordinary.
Okay, let's move into our SP3, both on the board. And I think for both of our kind of personal tiers, we had Flora third. I will say that Flora has gotten some feedback that points to there are scouts out there and evaluators out there who view him as the top pitcher in the class. He is extremely exciting. A UC Santa Barbara product, an absolute powerhouse when it comes to just developing pitching prospects. They've been a pitching factory, it feels like, for forever. 6'5", 205 pounds. He pitched mostly as a reliever during his 2024 season. 3.83 ERA over 47 innings with just a 19.5% strikeout rate and a 12.2% walk rate. He had a little bit of a breakout season, I think you could say, in 2025. Pitched as a starter. Still really strong ERA, 3.6, over 11 starts, 75 innings. The strikeout rate jumped to 27.8%. The walk rate fell to 5.5%, which is a significant year-over-year improvement. And he also has a pretty powerful two-pitch mix right now that he's working off of. A fastball in the mid-90s, been up to triple digits, slider in the low to mid-80s that earns plus grades, plus feedback. It feels like there are some more clear weaknesses with Flora. And I think the most obvious one to me that jumps out is just what's the third pitch going to be. It sounds like he has added both a kick change and a curveball that's kind of a differentiator in terms of shape to the slider. So we'll see what those pitches look like next spring. But he has been a pretty heavy two-pitch guy in college. Peter, what are your thoughts on Mr. Flora?
He's got a real chance. I mean, so does any arm in the draft, technically. But as far as, like, I guess the degree of a jump we could see from year over year when talking about these guys, at least the four initially, Flores has the chance to look maybe the most drastic because, like, mm-hmm. with Flukie and Peterson, as we laid out, it's more of, you know, I guess smaller steps forward and more like in-depth parts of their game that they could take to the next level. But there are more, you know, apparent areas of improvement here with Jackson. I mean, he's this mm-hmm. long, lean kid at 6'5 and 200 pounds. It's a more efforty look in his delivery than someone like a Liam Peterson or a Cameron Flukie. There's a little bit of a head whack there, but it's a whippy arm stroke. It's tons of arm speed. And last year it was, for the most part, really all just fastball slider. And they made up for, I think, 94% of all pitches he threw last spring. And the fastball velo has long been there. It was in the mid to upper 90s and up to 100 last spring. Jumps out of his hand, flashes a lot of life through the zone. I think, you know, obviously between Flora's flatter vertical approach angle, thanks, you know, to his yeah. slot.
That's what I was going to highlight. Like, both the first two pitchers we've talked about have really gaudy IVB numbers on their fastballs. But if you're a team, and there are a lot of teams now that are really targeting vertical approach angle, low release height, like Flora's fastball and overall like delivery lends itself really strongly to the teams who covet those traits. And it wouldn't shock me at all if people think because of just the release traits that he has, they're a lot more bullish on his fastball than these other guys who have similar power. Maybe Flora has a little bit more, but I'd say don't get caught up on the IVB numbers, because most of the people I'm talking to in recent years, months, have been really locked in on the VAA, the release height, as a separator for how the fastball is going to play. And it was a swing and miss pitch for him near the 30% mark in terms of miss rate last spring. So that's I think a key trait for him.
Yeah. I mean, not to go back to the first two arms, but like Liam's vertical approach angle is pretty steep. Obviously the natural, you know, he gets natural spin and carry on it thanks to his slot. Flukie's spin qualities are a little bit more modest than the three. It was around 2250, mm-hmm. With a flatter vertical approach angle than Liam Peterson. And then Flora is, you know, 4.5, which is the flattest of the group. And it's, you know, yep. Spin qualities are really good. He attacks out of this lower slot, a sub 6 foot release height. It plays really, really well in the top half and top third of the zone, unsurprisingly. And I think a point of focus with him this fall was, I think, tweaking the grip of the heater a little bit so he could maintain that shape and under the hood qualities, consistently outing over outing and mm-hmm. deeper into games. Because I think, you know, as Jacob Rudner wrote about in one of his pieces earlier this fall, the shape of it sort of backed up at times last spring, and it took on more of a dead zoney look. And then mm-hmm. the sweeper is this, you know, it's a plus pitch, borderline plus pitch, at worst, with a lot of late and lateral glove side bite. Mm-hmm. But he's got enough feel for it, you know, where last year he was able to get by, you know, turning it into more of a two plane pitch. He could back foot against lefties, but the real wild card is like, can he add an effective third pitch? How does that look? Is it the slurvier curveball that ends up being the go-to weapon, or is it this kick change he's experimenting with?
The changeup he threw last spring, he used it just 8% of the time versus lefties. I think you probably want to have a third pitch so you can go to a little bit more frequently than that. And overall, both lefties and righties had an OPS over 1,100 against the changeup. So I think just seeing some development there, whether it's this new kick change, whether it's the curveball that you mentioned, just a third pitch to help attack left-handed hitters, to help turn over a lineup, to just get a little bit further away from the reliever profile that he was as a freshman. You mentioned some of the question marks that you might still have with the delivery. I think just showing an arsenal that is a little bit more conducive to a starting role would be key for him. Maybe help catapult him inside the top 10 on consensus, and challenge the other two pitchers in this class who we currently have ahead of him will be rookies.
Yeah, it's not as an aesthetically pleasing delivery as Liam Peterson or Flukie, especially Liam Peterson, in terms of a delivery. But, you know, the stuff is, you know, it's legit power stuff. And, you know, if he shows a third pitch that can be a viable out pitch or swing and miss pitch against lefties, I have a feeling that if one emerges, it's going to end up being this kick change he's kind of long been working on. It'll really play in the favor because the strikes are above average. And there's a ton to like body wise too. I mean, it's with each of these three guys, they have, and same with Joey Volchko, who we'll talk about too, but they all have sort of this prototypical appealing pitcher's frames, like Liam Peterson is this more.
Yeah, they are very big and physical with power. Yeah.
Yeah. Of like this 6'5" physical kid. Flukie is this long, high waisted 6'6" righty. The room to fill out, and Flora is really lean and long at 6'5", 200 with perhaps the most projection between at least him and Cam Flukie. So, I mean, they all sort of fit into really positive categories.
Okay, well, let's get into maybe the most interesting player of the bunch, certainly the most volatile, the most extreme profile. That is, of course, Joey Volchko. Another big physical flame-throwing righty. I think purely in a vacuum, I think Volchko has the most exciting arm talent of the bunch. But at the same time, you look down at the card here, and the performance has just not been at all what you would like to see from a pitcher with this arm talent. In his first 2 years at Stanford, splitting time as a reliever as a freshman, he's got a 5.89 career ERA over 113 innings, 21 starts, 35 total appearances. The strikeout rate is just at 20.6%, which is quite low for a pitcher with the sort of pure stuff he has. I would expect him to miss far more bats than that over the course of his career. The walk rate, 13.6%. I will say he did make strides pretty significantly in the control department year over year. It was a really poor walk rate at 18.5% in 2024. He lowered it all the way to 10.5% in 2025. That did come with pretty significantly decreased strikeout numbers. So really figuring out how to unlock Volchko, get him consistently over the plate to attack hitters, because I saw him in person last year when he came in and played against Virginia. One of the nice things about him being at Stanford was he could make a in-conference road trip across the country, and I could make a short drive and go watch him. But there was an inning where he was putting everything over the plate and hitters had no idea what to do with him. The fastball is like upper 90s. It's got this crazy cutting action on the pitch. The slider, it has electric bite and power. And when he's putting these pitches over the plate, he looks unhittable at times. The problem is, like every other inning, he was kind of fighting himself to throw the ball over the plate and to throw strikes. For me, I'm not sure how crazy you think this comp is, but it feels very Brody Brecht-ish. And that's not a profile that a lot of teams feel comfortable with. But now he's at Georgia. He's got a pitching coach who's been around the block and has really helped develop pitchers in the past and not too distant past either. It's all about throwing strikes with him. Peter, what do you want to add on Volchko here?
From a pure stuff standpoint, it's pretty hard to argue against Joey having the most primo stuff in the 26 class, prep, college, whatever. I mean, he takes that crown of most loud, thunderous, whatever you want to call it, pure stuff. But it's also, or he's also the biggest wild card in that he's had a really, really difficult time over the last couple seasons harnessing it. And I think, as you said, like because I saw him a handful of times on the Cape, both in 24 and then a couple of times this year in 2025, when he is around the plate and in and around the strike zone throwing quality strikes, he is borderline unhittable. Mm-hmm. Like, it's that good. It is just pure power stuff across the board. It's this cut ride fastball that's been up to 99, 100 miles an hour. Pairs it with this power slider in the low to mid 90s with a really, you know, imposing an effective amount of late glove side bite, and then this power cutter that he's been working on, and then a changeup that was in the low to mid 90s, and then he didn't throw it a whole lot this spring, but you know, he's also in his back pocket got just this banger power curveball in the mid to upper 80s that is just a hellacious pitch. Mm-hmm. But the problem is he's had a really hard time, you know, sort of keeping it on a leash, so to speak, from a stuff standpoint. And, you know, the quality of strikes, at least over the summer, weren't great. So he got hit around a little bit. The slider didn't do a whole lot and got hit in my looks. But when he's feeling it, I mean, it's you'll come away from the yard really, really excited mm-hmm. about Joey and have a lot of 60s and maybe a couple 70s.
Yeah.
On your scouting card.
The fastball for him is such a unique pitch, and I don't know that some teams are really going to love the shape of it, because it doesn't have the sort of riding life that you would expect for like a pitch that gets this cut. You typically associate it with the cut ride, but like, it's not much of a swing and miss pitch for him. And I think Brody Brecht was like this to some degree, which is why I really like that comp, because if I remember it correctly, Brody Brecht's fastball was was a very heavy ground ball inducing pitch. And I think because of Volchko's, he does have a higher release height. He does not have like a super flat approach angle on the fastball, unless I'm completely forgetting. It's like a pretty steep angle. I don't know that it will ever be like an elite swing and miss pitch for him. He might have to go to the secondaries more to get misses, but if he can just use it to like drive ground balls and find the zone more consistently, I think he'll have more than enough swing and miss type offerings in the secondaries. But kind of the development of that pitch is going to be really fascinating to me. But he's such a wild card. I'm kind of terrified of him, but also super excited to see what he's going to look like. So he definitely is the biggest wild card of this group. Like, just scanning over our prospects in general, maybe outside of like Jacob Lombard and Sawyer Strohsnyder, he's probably like one of the bigger wild cards in the first round that we currently have ranked as first round players.
Yeah, I think, you know, we'll get into him as time goes on, but Justin LeBron maybe a little bit as well. But
true.
With Joey, like, and it's a great point you brought up about his fastball, because the velocity is there, but the sort of the under the hood qualities in terms of its shape are rather, I guess, modest as it pertains to it being a swing and miss pitch. Like, it had a sub 20% whiff rate last spring at Stanford, and this is a big if here, but if he's able to get in the zone with it on a more consistent basis and command it enough in parts of the zone that allow him to optimize its shape, if he can get it in the lower half of the zone, I think that'll really play in his favor. But those are two really big ifs with Joey. But it sounds like this fall that, and again, like, we have to talk about fall ball because it happens, but
everyone is the greatest player on earth in fall baseball. I'll say that it's like hope springs eternal in the fall, and I think it should, but it's like, it's hard to make that, like, barring like a significant uptick in velocity. Like, it's great. I'm glad to hear that all of your players look good in the fall. Let's see what happens when they're playing real games for me, you know?
Right.
Like, we hear every single year, Peter, you know, you hear like every coach is talking about how good their whole team looks. Like, we'll see what happens.
Right. And even from a scouting perspective, like, when you go out and get looks at these guys, I mean, you have to take into account some of the changes that have been made, some of the changes that are currently being made. But until you go out and do it in the spring, and especially at an SEC school like Georgia, and it yields positive results, like, you sort of have to take it with a little bit of a grain of salt. Like, you know, at least with Joey Volchko, it sounds like this spring they tinkered with the fastball grip to try and get some more ride out of it. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, trying from a slider perspective, it sounds like they tried to get Joey to start throwing a true sweeper more.
I feel like that would be great for him, because he seems to just naturally get around the side of the baseball for everything. So,
yeah, no, absolutely. And it also sounds like directionally there's been an emphasis of maintaining of being more linear towards the plate. And it seems like that's naturally lowered his slot, which, hearing it and reading it and all of this is great, but he's got to go out and do it. So I mean, if he can do all of that and go out and perform in the SEC as maybe a Friday night starter, with this kind of premium stuff and the strikes take a real step forward, it'd be kind of hard to say that he's not a first round pick. But if we're sitting here in May or June, and it's a little bit more of the same, you know, maybe the strikeouts are, you know, more where they should be.
Right. For someone, there will be someone who's behind him who probably has passed him at that point, if that's the case.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, if we're still sitting here and he's more like 24, 25 Joey, you know, maybe an uptick in the strikeouts, performance-wise, from an ERA standpoint, it's a little bit lower. But if it's more of the same, like, there will be questions as to whether or not he's picked in the first round. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, if he does take this step forward, carries over some of the changes he made from the fall into the spring, and it proves to be adjustments that allow him to get good hitters out, maybe get some more swing and miss with his fastball, live around the strike zone more, then we're going to be talking about a guy where it's like, he's not going to get out of the first round. How high in the first round is he going to get picked?
Right. Yeah. Fun four names topping this college pitching class. I think I like all these guys. I don't love any of them. And we'll see if that changes next spring, who kind of comes out and claims the spot. It's a wide open race. There's lots of movement in the college pitching generally every year. There's no reason to think it won't be any different for the 26th class. So it'll be a lot of fun to watch. But Peter, any final comments? Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, to put you on the spot sort of briefly,
do it.
Who would be your top pitcher right now on the college side in the class?
I'll probably be boring and stick with Peterson. I'll just stick with Peterson. But I'm tempted to pick Flukie.
I'm rolling with Flukie. I know I already sort of laid out the reasons why, but I've got Flukie by a hair. But it'll be very fun to follow throughout the spring and you know, these four names and seeing how they sort of align as the season goes on and what it looks like. And maybe we have a fifth name enter the race. Again, as I alluded to earlier in the podcast, looking at you, Ryan Lynch, and perhaps even Tommy Lepore. But yeah, it should be fun. And this will be one of the more fun narratives, I think, to follow in the class.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, that's going to wrap it up for us today. Thank you guys for listening to the show. Thank you for supporting Baseball America. We are still rolling out top 10s every day on the site. As we mentioned at the top of the show, we are well underway on the Prospect Handbook production. So if you've not pre-ordered your Prospect Handbook, definitely jump on that. Makes a great Christmas present for anyone in the family who is a fan of baseball. Maybe you can convert a sports fan into a baseball fan with a Prospect Handbook purchase. That would be a lot of fun too. But no, we really appreciate you guys hanging out, chatting baseball with us. We'll see you back on the Draft Podcast in a few weeks, but I know Peter will be doing the College Podcast. In the meantime, if you're not listening to that, go listen to it. But for Peter, I'm Carlos. So long, everybody.